Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Coming up on today's episode of Park Date, the presenter is on strike, the producers are on strike, the writers are on strike, the technicians are on strike, the lifeguards are on strike, so I can't go to the swimming pool, the dentist is on strike, so they won't take my aligners out, and even I'm on strike. Chris Beanland will not pay me enough money. He is a bastard. So take what you can get on this Strike It episode of Park Date. Welcome to Park Date. I hope you're all well. I am at the Hurricane Heritage Park in Hurricane, Utah. A fantastic park where there are all these relics of the pioneer days when people were crossing America to move to the West. There are these kind of wagons and agricultural equipment and these old buildings and statues and things. You can hear some kids playing in the background. Really nice memory of the history of this place, which sits next to the very beautiful and moving Zion National Park, which I've really enjoyed exploring. That's the preamble done. This episode is one that I hope you're really going to enjoy. It features the Birmingham writer Catherine O'Flynn, who is honestly one of my favourite writers. Hands down, she's the author of Mr. Lynch's Holiday, What Was Lost, and her favourite book of mine, The News Where You Are, which is an absolute work of genius, a funny and moving and incredibly inspiring to me novel, which I would love to turn into a TV series or a movie one day, if Catherine will let me, because it's so great and I think you can make it brilliant. So I talked to Catherine at Cannon Hill Park in Birmingham just before we did an event at the Midlands Arts Centre where we showed some old TV programs about Birmingham. I used to live in Birmingham, as you know. Regular listeners will know I talk about this, and Catherine is from there, and we did this event where we talk about Birmingham, and we showed these very camp and kitsch films, which I think everyone enjoyed watching. Me and Catherine talked about it some more, and in fact there'll be another of these events coming up later this year, so watch this space for more information about that. There's a very special guest we will be doing it with later this year. Catherine, thank you for participating. Do enjoy this episode of Park Date, and as ever, if you like it, please do leave a review and subscribe at wherever you get your podcasts, socials at Park Date Podcast. Please enjoy this episode. Welcome to Cannon Hill Park in Birmingham on a very cold and dark night. I'm with Catherine O'Flynn. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Chris.
How are you doing, Catherine?
It's okay, you know, it's It's kind of, I realise I spent quite a lot of my life avoiding parks in the dark, so this is quite, I don't know if it's exciting or hideous, but yeah, here we are.
We were just saying that maybe the concept of park date does work better in the summer when you can walk around a park and it's sunny and warm.
I mean, it's only 5:30, isn't it?
It's half.
I don't think we'd really come. We've done the whole sun moon thing at this time of year.
Exactly, and there's no light. And no one around. And did you say, Catherine, you had to walk through Cannon Hill Park from your...
Yeah. I walked here...
from your neighbourhood.
Yeah, and there was kind of hideous, like, gridlock on the road. So I thought, I'll turn off into the park and then instantly regret it. I thought, you know, it was like 4:45. I thought, it's not going to be that scary. But I am actually... I've realised I am a real scaredy cat.
Are you?
Yeah, I get very easily spooked. And so, yeah, that's pretty much proved it to me.
This is interesting to me, Catherine, because a lot of the characters in your books are quite brave, aren't they? Like, they're kind of looking out, like investigating mysteries and...
Yeah, I don't know if they'd actually be that brave when it came down to it. You know, I kind of, you know, yeah, I will sort of, you know, look at things and think about things, but whether I would actually step into any kind of situation of peril or jeopardy, I don't want to disappoint you right from the off.
That's so interesting to me. Do you think is there an element of you maybe writing like sort of a kind of
better version of myself?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I reckon. Definitely. Sort of slightly funnier and more exciting. And if I literally wrote about myself, well, then, you know, that would not really appeal. That would appeal to even less readers than I do.
It's funny as well, isn't it, when people say, oh, do you write about yourself? And I think it's dangerous territory if you're just going to write completely autobiographically, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can tell, can't you, when there's a really obvious
sort
of version of the writer.
Very much so, yeah. Or that someone is clearly writing a memoir that they've been kind of pressurised into fictionalising because the publishers think, you know, a novel will do better than a memoir. Yeah, it always comes across because novels that are actually disguised memoirs are kind of weird. You think this isn't quite fully novelish, but it's got a certain feeling to it. But yeah, but having said that, I was the other day thinking about things I'd written, and I realised that they are kind of all versions of the same book. I think I'm not sure that I am, you know, you like to think you could turn your hand to anything, but I've come to the point that I realise I'm basically always going to be writing about, I don't know, variations of loss and place. That's it, basically.
That's so funny that you say that, but they're all really interesting things and great subject matter. And I think there's a lot within that that you can say as well, isn't there? So,
well, I guess. I mean, I keep sort of churning them out. But every time I start, though, I think it's going to be a different book. I think, this is where I'm going to really tackle these other issues. And then at the end, it's like, oh, no, it was another book about loss. Oh, God, some geese.
What?
Jesus. You don't imagine geese flying at night, do you?
I thought they might have been bats or something.
Yeah, I did at first, but that's just because I have no idea about nature. And then I looked up and realised they were clearly geese.
Oh my God, what we could do, if there's time after the event that we're doing tonight, we could go to the Birmingham Nature Park. Have you been there?
Is that
what it's called?
We used to call it the Nature Centre. I think it's got nature a fancier Centre. Name now, but I'm not going there, by the way. But carry on with this crazy idea,
We could find out about the natural world. We could look at...
Chris, it closes. At like tea time. It's not going to be open
it's Birmingham,
at 9.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I've spent too much time in London.
Or New York or somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what kind of nature centre, municipal nature centre is open at night in the middle of winter? That wouldn't work. We'd just get arrested if we tried
We
to
would,
there.
Wouldn't we? I want to see the red pandas. Do they still live there? Do you remember the story of the red panda that escaped?
I don't know this story.
Oh my gosh, Catherine, this is one of my favourite Birmingham stories. They had two red pandas in the nature centre, and one of them escaped, and it got as far as Moseley, and everyone was looking for it for days, and it was on the local news, and eventually they tracked it down, and the red panda was voted Brummie of the Year by the people of Birmingham when they had to vote for their favourite Brummie, because it's kind of made this epic journey
did
across.
Did he briefly become a member of UB40?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Travels around Moseley.
On Triangle. Yeah, UB40.
I don't know how I missed that. That sounds like a key moment in Birmingham's history that passed me by.
I think it was about 2005.
Right.
Yeah, so we can talk about that tonight. Well, so maybe this is a good moment to mention why we're here. We're obviously stood in this park in the cold.
Mm. Literally yards from warmth and light. Yes. No, but it's important that we stand in the park, I get that.
Catherine's kind of thinking, why aren't we sat inside? It's like we're the...
No, it's atmospheric.
I feel like we're the sort of orphans at Christmas. We're looking inside at the happy, warm families drinking their coffees and their cocos, and we're stood outside trying to stick to the principle of the Park Date podcast, where we do the podcast outside.
It's because you've got integrity.
Wow, thank you. You're the first person to say that. Thank you, Catherine. I appreciate it. But if they ever ask you to be on Last Word, if I get run over or something, I'd very much enjoy you talking about my sense of integrity. It would mean a lot to me.
Stood out there in the cold, even though I'll do that.
Oh, very loud sneeze in the background.
Yeah.
But the reason we're at Mac, we're at this art centre, which is next to the park, and tonight me and Catherine are going to be doing an event at the Square Eyes TV Festival, where we're going to show programmes about Birmingham and we're going to talk about the TV history of Birmingham. How are you feeling about this, Catherine? Are you excited about it?
I am quite excited now. Yeah. I was a little bit anxious for a while, you know, but that's just my trademark feeling. And now, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think there's some quite good little things we've found, and I think it'll be pleasant for us. I'm not sure how much the audience are going to...
Yeah.
I had this worry that actually we picked a lot of clips that we find...
We enjoy.
And we'll just absolutely kill the audience, as you know, with their sort of inner ring road. Yeah. But you know, hey, it's, you know... We'll like it, that's the key thing.
We'll like it. Well, I think we're going to have a great time because we're going to show a lot of the programmes that we like.
Yeah.
And then whether we'll do a postscript podcast after and we'll see how people have responded. Have they been throwing, you know, banana skins at us because they can't take... another video about the inner ring road.
Yeah, of a man shouting above the sound of traffic in Birmingham in the 1970s, which an awful lot of the clips seem to involve.
That's a lot of it, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, but hey, you know, I think hopefully they're up for that.
Yeah. People know, I mean, they know what they're getting into. They've read the description. So if they turn up, they've only got themselves to blame,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, they're fools.
Exactly. But I feel like, I don't know about you, Catherine, but I was looking through... Obviously, what we've chosen, I think, is great. But there's even more we could show. There's a lot of really great archive stuff and a lot of great nostalgia. And I feel like maybe we could do this again. We could show different things.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot about the history of Birmingham that you can kind of learn from watching these things. And a lot of it's really funny as well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right. We could have... you could definitely speak... Because we've kind of... I guess there's quite a lot of our stuff is... 60s, 70s stuff, which is what people think of when they think of Birmingham, and obviously for TV you're going to have to go that. But there would be loads of stuff that would be really interesting to cover, but you know, another time maybe. Let's see how bad the feedback is.
But yeah, it's certainly something that's like supposed to be fun. I think there's going to be like a lot of funny clips and things, and yeah, kind of a bit of quirky nostalgia. What are some of the favourites of yours, Catherine, that we're going to be showing tonight? What kind of appealed to you when we were thinking about it?
I think I was expecting to find lots of like kind of quite cheesy local TV handover stuff, and I suppose predictably that's not that easy to find really, because people don't necessarily tend to video those moments where someone, you know, sort of... I always remember actually watching this live on Midlands Today where I think it was Kay Alexander, who was a, you know, a long-term presenter of Midlands Today, famed for her amazing knitwear.
Very glamorous.
Yeah. And she was introducing, you know, the next item. What do they call it? They don't call it an item. They have some little word for it. Doesn't matter.
Package.
Package, something like that. Yeah, that's probably it. And she was obviously reading the auto cue, and as she read it, it tailed off with her saying, "And now for some more parochial nonsense." And so someone had obviously dicked around with the auto cue. And it was just, as she said it, her voice kind of just tailed off and just like, parochial nonsense.
Wow. And someone would be in big trouble for that.
They would be in really big trouble, yeah. But so I didn't find things like that. But the, I don't know, I really like that random clip found of the angry Liverpudlian man who... is what's his name? Arthur.
Yeah.
Can't remember his surname now. Anyway, he's a Liverpudlian sculptor.
He doesn't like Birmingham.
He doesn't like Birmingham, mm. And he's also quite a cross man anyway.
Yes.
And it's just an amazing, like, splenetic sort of 15 minutes or something of him just really ranting about how awful Birmingham is. And, you know, no, some of it is not wrong, but it's really the level of his sort of spleen that's kind of quite amusing. He reminds me a lot of, you know, Harry Cross, who used to be on Brookside years ago. He's got that level of kind of...
Yeah.
But yes, that's fun. What about you?
Yeah, I like those ones too. Mm. I think the Liverpudlian one is really interesting as well, because it's kind of giving a different viewpoint, because there's a lot of very positive... stuff about how the city is great and here's all these amazing new developments, which I think is really interesting as well, because it's I think one of the things that attracts me about that period and those clips is the optimism, the kind of blind optimism, like we'll build this ring road, there's a lot of ring road stuff, here's this new utopia. So it's interesting to see the sort of the other side of that, but I love, obviously we're both drawn to the humorous side of life, I think, aren't we, Catherine, as writers? And I think the things which are funny really, really make me laugh. When Chris Tarrant is talking to the guy from the countryside who comes to Birmingham and he doesn't really know what to make of it. That's brilliant well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a really odd idea for a segment, isn't it? Just
exactly.
A walk around this old guy who hasn't been into a city for 25 years.
Yeah. And Chris Tarrant's kind of explaining to him how a parking meter works and how how a roundabout works, and he's sort of none the wiser. He's not seen Birmingham since the 20s or something, has
there
he?
There are probably things that are more remarkable to him than the parking meter, you know? It's like not that big a thing.
Exactly.
But yeah.
Yeah, but I think the kind of funniness of it is, one of the things that really appeals to me. I think also when, I don't know about you, Catherine, when I was writing... my novel, The Wall in the Head, I was sort of... There was a part of me that was drawn to this idea of the kind of seedy glamour of it, right?
Yeah.
So how maybe that it was... I think a lot of the programmes have kind of portrayed this idea of, maybe this kind of 70s glamour, like, people smoking and driving a car and drinking, and it all seems like very... very cool in a way, and now but then you look back on it and you're like, what? It's just kind of like funny. You see that in gangsters, I think, a lot. There's a lot of this
definitely.
Sort of smoking and drinking and driving sort of culture,
that real kind of seedy underbelly of Birmingham,
right?
It was
exactly
kind of the prevalent culture, wasn't it? The kind of,
exactly. And then I think the humor as well. I think Birmingham's a very funny place, and people are very keen to sort of laugh at stuff, so I kind of came up with, this idea for some bad sitcoms and some bad game shows with like bad production values, kind of as a homage to things like Gangsters and Crossroads and stuff like that, which I think are just a pleasure to watch as well. It's sort of simpler times, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah, I always wonder how it would go if they show, if it, on one of the TV channels they reran Crossroads.
Yeah, what would people
think? I would
certainly
watch it.
Yeah.
That's really weird. There's a dog with like a light on its and his colour. From a distance, it was just like a low-level UFO. I was really terrified. I was like frozen with terror then. I just saw this light bounding across the park.
A red light just moving quite slowly. Instantly, I saw, for Halloween, someone had done this costume for their dog, which... made the dog look like a giant spider. So they let the dog run around, and it looked like this like giant spider, and people
were caused pandemonium.
It did, yeah. People were kind of running away in terror.
Wow.
So it was almost as bad as that.
it occurred to me sort of too late that we didn't find any clips of Cannon Hill Park to put in. There's one I've seen, the Telly Savalas looks at Birmingham. It has bits of Cannon Hill Park, but I was Yeah, because it used to have, were you weren't in Birmingham in the 70s, were you? But there was a mysterious thing that used to happen, I think, every year called the Tulip Festival.
Oh.
And I've never... it was a really big deal, that's what I remember. And I think...
What happened?
Well, exactly what happened. As far as I remember, I came one year and it was really underwhelming. There were just...
Right.
There were lots of tulips, but they weren't doing anything. You know, there wasn't any sorting. Yeah. So there were tulips and I think there might have been a fair, but every year it was like, oh, the Tulip Festival is coming again. So that, I'm sure...
Wouldn't to investigate
up.
That.
Yeah, it's because it sounds like some amazing pagan rite, the tulip, like midsummer or something. But it, as far as I remember, it wasn't like that at all. It was...
just
I mean, I might be doing an injustice to the Tulip Festival, but... You know, and I was thinking of, I was trying to think of memories I have of this park in particular. I don't know, did you used to hang out here much when you were in Birmingham?
Yeah, I did come here a bit when I lived in Moseley. This was like the nearest park. Here in Highbury Park, I used to go to as well.
Yeah, Highbury's nice.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're both kind of nice parks. But no, I don't remember Tulip Festival, but... Now you mentioned Telly Savalas looks at Birmingham.
Yeah.
For those of you that have never seen this, let's just call it the best film ever made. Because it simply is. And actually, Catherine very kindly did a podcast with me when we talked about that. And hopefully one day we'll finally make something of that. I think there's a whole series about this film where Telly Savalas... Does he or does he not come to Birmingham? Mm. We need to investigate. But yeah, he goes to a park. I'm not sure. Is it this park?
I think it is Cannon Hill.
Is it? Yeah,
yeah, I think it is. It looks like it.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's a disco dancing competition. An over 40s disco dancing competition. Yeah. And I think there's hot air balloons as well, isn't there, maybe?
Yeah.
Do you remember those?
I don't remember the hot air balloons, to be honest. But that might have been one of the longer cuts. Because the last time I saw a brief, you know, these sort of redacted version.
Right. Catherine, I've got the director's cut.
I think it
lasts about 25 minutes or something.
Yeah, see, I'm not sure I've ever seen the full 25 minutes, so that's pretty exciting.
Right, well, you have to come round mine in London, and we'll get some popcorn, and we'll get some soft drinks.
Brew 11, some 1970s kind of Midlands alcohol.
Brew 11, there was M&B, is that the M&B brand?
Yeah,
we'll get that exactly, and we'll get one of those pub ashtrays, get some cigarettes on the go, it'll be perfect, but Telly comes to some kind of park, and it looks like a very... Very exciting occasion.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? That could have been midst Tulip Festival. I don't know. Maybe that's why he came.
Maybe we were talking about showing that tonight, but because it's a TV festival and that's, I guess, technically a film sort of cinema film, then maybe it doesn't count. And also, it costs money that no one has. In fact, I'm surprised the lights and the heating are even on in Mac. It's, you know, given current conditions.
Yeah.
So I think the money that we would need to show Telly Savalas looks at Birmingham would be outside our budget. But
sad.
I think watching all those films, they inspire both of us. And I wanted to ask you as well, Catherine. Like, you know, when it comes to writing and TV, I think there's so many crossovers, isn't there? And I was really inspired by watching so many of those TV shows and so many of those films, and I kind of wanted to fictionalise them. Telly Savalas looks at Birmingham appears as itself in
the News Where You Are.
You talk about that, which I thought was brilliant. Brilliant way. You talk about walking on the walkways and sitting on the seats. Which is, it's great. I think it's good to bring those kind of touchstone, those cultural.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Touchstones into a novel, isn't it?
Yeah. I think, because it was about, you know, the sort of local TV in Birmingham and the sort of the mythology of 70s Birmingham. Yeah. And that film is just such an oddity and, engaging in so many levels. It's just marvellous. Yeah. I mean, I don't like to think about the fact that Telly Savalas did, you know, was it Portsmouth as well? I try not to think about that.
Portsmouth and Aberdeen. We won't talk about that.
No, that's that literally is really upsetting. Yeah. But yeah,
it's like he had two other wives.
Yeah, it is. It's like, you know,
secret.
Yeah, it really, really upset me when I first found that out. But you know, yeah, I just block it out.
Yeah, don't think about it.
I would never want to see those films. In case he says some of the same lines, because I suspect he might do. Because you know, the script is quite impoverished, and I suspect it might have been spread thinly over all three.
Harold Bayham was definitely one for rehashing.
Recycling.
But yeah, I think they work really well, and I think the concept of TV news works really well. And I was thinking about this recently. I don't know if you've seen the Newsreader, Catherine, the Australian TV drama that they showed on the BBC, and that's set in an Australian TV newsroom in the 80s.
Okay.
It's really good. Yeah, I really recommend that one. But I think that TV newsroom is a really great place for drama. And I think, you know, it works so well in The News Where You Are as like a place where you can find those disparate characters, all the different kind of TV journalists and then their families. And it kind of all works really well, like a sort of strange family.
Yeah, family. And I was kind of intrigued by just the perceptions we have of, you know, local TV and local TV presenters. And I suppose, you know, you grow up and you just, I don't know, you know, like with when they make their corny jokes, you think, oh God, they're terrible. And then, you know, you think, yeah, but they've got an interior life and, you know, they're a journalist and they, you know, this is actually all quite well judged and well measured. And it kind of interested me, the kind of the public perception and the person.
Yeah, they're fantastic characters as well, aren't they? You know, if you don't live in the Midlands, you might not know these names like Alan Towers and Bob Warman. But in this region, in Birmingham and Wolverhampton and Coventry and Leicester and Warwick, all these places, they're really household names. These are the people that you would sit down and watch every day on the telly at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Kay Alexander and Sue Wendy Nelson, Sue Beardsmore. All these people became really iconic. Yeah. There's a mythology around them.
It's a strange kind of celebrity, isn't it?
Isn't it?
It's got very clear boundaries.
Yeah.
But they are very, you know, big stars in there. Mm. You know, just very recognised and quite beloved in their area. So yeah, it must be a really weird type of celebrity.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I was rewatching. They made a sort of celebration piece for Bob Warman when he retired from Central and then ATV before. He'd been presenting for 50 years, which is an incredible amount of time to be doing the local news. So he's sort of seen all these changes.
Yeah.
But this very sort of debonair character,
Yeah, he's like the classic kind of anchorman, isn't he?
Exactly. Yeah. And I imagine, Catherine, you sort of had people like Bob and Alan in mind, when you were creating your character.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think I had a bit of Nick Owen in there
Nick
as well.
Owen.
Obviously, he's kind of an interesting character because he went national and then came back. And I'm not sure how he's felt about that. But
yes,
he's now, you know, he had the national stardom, him and Diamond, and then was back in the Midlands. So who knows? I don't think he's from the Midlands, is he originally? I'm not sure. I bet neither of us have ever read his memoir, which, you know what it was called?
What was it called?
Okay, this is gonna okay. In the Time of Nick. You see what he's done there? He has amazingly
In the Time of Nick.
And
That is brilliant. I actually do know where he's from. He's from Luton.
That's what I thought, because he's a Luton town
supporter.
Yeah,
he's a Luton town supporter,
yeah.
But that's a great title for a memoir. And also, he was on ITV, ATV as it was in the Midlands, and then went to do the BBC after. So he kind of done both,
both
sides.
He's looked at love from both sides.
Yeah,
yeah.
But
yeah,
I think
yeah.
also, I think you know, one of the things we're going to talk about tonight is, the BBC and ITV were the main two kind of producing companies. And I think we're probably going to show a lot from those two. And you can see the differences as well, can't you?
Yeah.
In the programmes that they produced, in the dramas and the comedies, maybe BBC often a bit more kind of highbrow, we would say, maybe ITV.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Certainly with the news, the ITV news, ATV Today had a bit of a lighter feel, I think, or, you know.
Yes, exactly,
to some extent, yeah.
Exactly, you can see that in the news, can't you? ATV News had pieces about, you know, welly wanging and, who was the I forget his name, the guy who Chris Tarrant would often do a 1-2 with, who was a bit older. Was it John Swallow? Something like that?
Oh, I think that is right, yeah.
Yeah, he would do a lot of those kind of quirky reports, which always kind of lightened the tone.
Yeah.
You could see the differences, couldn't you, between the both of them, like how they would cover a story.
Yeah, I mean, for me, there was a lot of, I mean, this is a bit harsh, but it did seem for a long time that I'd put on local news, which by that stage was Midlands Today, really, and it just seemed to have news that was insanely dispiriting and depressing. I mean, not necessarily sometimes even that much news value. It was just like, what can we do that will really bring people down the most? What local story is going to devastate them? I'm sure that wasn't their brief, but I think I was just unlucky that every time I turned it on, it was like, oh, Jesus Christ, what now? What sort of, you know. But yeah, so sometimes the welly wanking, you need a bit of that, I think.
I think it's funny as well. I was thinking, like, when I was writing about how these programmes kind of impact us, and how maybe at a local level you're so close, if it makes sense, that you feel like maybe there's another dog illuminated.
You don't realise, but I see them coming from the distance, and there's always
Catherine's looking in the distance. What's coming over? What's coming
over? UFOs. It's weird. It's a whole world you don't see in the daytime in the park.
It's really
nighttime
weird.
Illuminated dogs.
It's really weird.
Which would be a good name for a band.
It would be. That could be our band. You could play keyboards. I'll be singing.
Bon Tempe.
It'll be great. But yeah, I think this idea of the connection to local TV is really interesting. And in my book, the writer kind of is almost going a bit mad. He's kind of dreaming about these sequences, the opening sequences where you would see the titles to ATV Today or Midlands Today, where you see these views of the city. He's kind of dreaming about those things, and then he's dreaming about the logos, which I think are quite funny, and the weird music, and it all kind of comes back home, because it feels so near. Like, you see them out filming stuff, you watch the TV and you think, oh, that's just down the road.
It
feels kind of near. And also the connection that you have, and I love in the news where you are, the news presenter is getting communications from people, they're writing in, and obviously, the joke writer, which I think is great as well. Like, he's got fans, and you think of Yeah, the kind of closeness makes it seem like you can be, it's almost like you know these people and you see them in your living room every day. So
yeah, I remember seeing, I can't remember what this was on, it was a program I was watching on telly, possibly about local news, sort of, and there was a woman on it talking about her mother who had loved, this really lacks specificity, this story, sorry, because I can't remember any of the names, but her mother loved,
make it all up,
yeah, her mother loved this particular you know, the anchor man, yeah, in their area, really you know, was and tuned in every day, and then he stopped being the, yeah, the guy on that TV channel, and she kind of stopped watching and, you know, lost interest. And then years later, she was on holiday in another part of the country, and he was there doing their local TV. And apparently, like, the mother was dead. She literally, you know, it was as if she had been betrayed personally. She just couldn't believe that he'd just gone to another region. And I think that's it. There's that kind of very, close connection with Tara.
Yeah. Yeah. And you do, I know exactly what you mean. In the Bob Orman documentary, I learned that he did a spell on Calendar, Yorkshire TV News.
Did he?
Which I wasn't aware of, but yeah, the idea that there were these other regions with other music—it's
a bit like the kind of Father Ted, Craggy Island, right? This parallel universe,
exactly,
you don't want to know about, with like very similar but slightly, what's slightly weird.
Exactly, yeah. And another island with
parallel
community. And I don't know if you remember this as well, Catherine. You could kind of retune TVs.
Yes. Yeah.
And I remember, like, when I was little, you could retune the TV and you could maybe get another region, you know, indistinctly, and you could see a bit of another local news and the other logos. You're like, what is this other world out there? It's very strange. This is before, like, people, maybe younger people don't realise everything's very centralised now. You just have BBC, ITV, it's all very corporate. But the regions were so strong.
Yeah, you had to be different
Seventies and eighties. Yeah. Different logos, different listings, different programs. It was very, very, very unique and very, a very strong identity in every region, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you'd sort of get these glimpses of this kind of bizarro world version of your. And it's like,
exactly. Yeah, different presenters, different news, different music. It's very, very, very strange. But I almost wonder if we're kind of going back to that, because you see now. Maybe this is something we can talk about tonight as well in the event, but I think a lot of, you know, when they closed Central and they closed Pebble Mill in Birmingham, and that kind of spelled the end for a lot of TV production here. But now you see there's this onus on getting out of London, so Channel 4 have gone to Leeds, and lots of the BBC have gone to Manchester. So there's a lot of outside London now. It's kind of the opposite to what you were seeing maybe 10, 20 years ago. And if we had the studios in Birmingham, I think there would be a lot of production here, a lot of media here, and probably, the city would have been maybe doing a bit better on all of those things.
It is really sad. I mean, Pebble Mill was, I mean, it was such a cool building as well, you know, designed by John Maiden, obviously, sort of big Birmingham architect.
Yes,
and, you know, it was this, like, kind of national TV that was going out every day. And I think, as I sort of said to you, it was where I saw my first ever gig. I saw the Wombles there.
Yes, and, of course. How was that?
Dreamlike, I think. You know, often I think, was it a dream? And actually, I checked recently. I thought, they did appear there in about, I can't remember, 73 or 74. Yeah. So I'd have been 3 or 4. Yeah. And I just remember it being completely mental. Just, you know, not being able to get my head around the fact, like, geez, God, the Wombles are on the...
That's incredible.
But actually, I think the chances of not running into the Wombles live at that point was like...
No.
Yeah, yeah. They seemed to be just doing anything. They were turning up everywhere. But, you know, for me, that's what Pebble Mill always represents.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, lots of memories. Before we finish, Catherine, obviously we've both written novels kind of inspired by TV, pop culture, music and other things like that as well. I guess when I was writing mine, I don't know if it was similar for you, but I sort of wrote it as well with this idea in mind of how it would look, how you could film it. And I think, you know, I think for me, I would love to write something for TV or film later on. I don't know if that's something that you feel, if you would like to see What Was Lost or The News Where You Are as a TV adaptation or something different you'd like to do.
It's weird because I used to think about that and I thought, there'd be something really appealing about not having to write, you know, all the, you know, just some visual, you don't have to write all the how they got into the room, blah blah blah. But what I realized quite I actually went and did screenwriting course.
Yes, so we were talking about this. Yeah.
And I realised the problem is you need to have a lot of ideas. You need to be able to have ideas and be willing to dispose of them quickly, you know, because the chance of people become. And I was thinking about this earlier, I have an idea about once every 4 years, and, you know, it's just not going to cut the mustard in the fast moving world of. So I'm kind of intrigued by that, but I think I'm not sure that I have the right stuff for that at all.
Yeah. Well, I do think your books would make really, really good TV adaptations, I have to say.
I know they've been trying to do What Was Lost for years. Different people keep taking it on and then finally passing it on. But it's still out there somewhere with someone. So it's kind of, and I think the news where you are someone tried as well for a while and then again get...
We should do it together. I think it would be great. The News Where You Are especially, I think, would be great. Mr. Lynch's Holiday would be a great TV show, and What Was Lost as well. But I think the News Where You Are...
Because it's about TV,
It would be, I think it would work so, so well, definitely. So, yeah, we should try and make that happen, I think, definitely. And also, just before we finish, Catherine, what are you kind of working on at the moment? You were doing some children's books as well, weren't you? Are you doing more of that?
I did a couple of children's books, which I really enjoyed writing. Still managed to really be about loss and place, you know, even though I tried to venture into children's books. And, we're next to a kind of boot camp session now. This is it. See, again, I didn't know this kind of thing went on at night.
Is this like exercise or something?
I think it's that British military fitness, you know, where it's like a mean man shouts at you. And,
he's quite loud. Let's go back towards Mac. And we'll shouting at those people to do some exercise. Yeah, exactly.
So I wrote a couple of children's books, which I enjoy doing, but I think I don't know, there's a bit of a thing with children's books where, you know, there's a bit of an expectation, you're right, another one, you build up a big series. And I don't know, I just thought, well, I've kind of said what I wanted to say. I might go back to them, but for now I'm kind of at two. See, two is a really bad number though for a number of children's books. I mean, you do one standalone, that makes sense, you do six, two just doesn't make any sense
whatsoever. You've got to do four more, definitely.
Two is
the full David Walliams.
But I like kind of just leaving it there, just sort of half finished meal, just like, oh, we'll just do two. Since then, I've been trying to kind of write a book about the house and the area I grew up in, so kind of a memoir type thing.
We were saying that, exactly.
Something about, because basically, you know, it was this, everything, my mum and dad had a shop and everything around us got demolished, so this, I think, is why I'm so interested in, like, redevelopment of Birmingham. But they were actually, I didn't really realise this when I was little, but our shop was under a compulsory purchase order to be demolished at any point, and everyone else had moved out. We were literally the only people who lived in this block, and it was the only block left standing within for quite a few years.
And where was this was
in Neatchells,
so East Birmingham.
And so it's kind of just about growing up in that kind of empty space and the impact that the house kind of, I suppose, it had a bit of bad vibe to it. You know, it was the shop was great when the shop was open. It was all, when the shop shut, there was just a slightly, and I think it was because my parents were kind of trapped there. Obviously, they couldn't sell it, they couldn't move. They were just, and so I've been right about that. But I mean, that makes it sound quite dark. It's largely about, you know, kind of just sort of you know, music I was into, and you know, you know, insane confectionery prejudices and things like that. But, you know, there's this kind of slight sort of darkness in it, really.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So I don't know. I don't know that it's, don't know that it's anything anyone would particularly want to read, but I'm kind of enjoying writing it.
I would love to read it, Catherine. It kind of makes me think of maybe some elements of, like, Lindsay Hanley's books as well. Which I think is really, really good on that, because she brings in pop culture as well, which I really love. Like the music, listening to the Smiths while she's kind of exploring this weird new world. I think it's really interesting to bring all that together, isn't it?
I'm doing that.
Look forward to it.
Thank you, Chris. You might be the only person who will, but that's good to hear.
Right, let's go inside. I've kept you out in the cold too long. It is a bit chilly, isn't
it? It's been great. I mean, it's been really great for me to see what goes on in a park at night. Yeah, I used to work in Mac, and
did you? Yeah, I never knew that.
Yeah, I worked on the box office here for quite a few years,
that's right.
And so I never used to exit the park side at night. So yeah,
only the other side.
Yeah, luminous dogs and you know sergeant major type people shouting, and it's not as terrifying as I thought actually.
Have you still got a key to the you know the all the secret back rooms and stuff? Well, I think that David's going to show us that tonight. But
that's great, because when I worked here, it was before it had its big sort of refit a few years back, and it was labyrinthine, and there was the kind of the puppet store, which was amazing, where all the sort of the original wooden puppets from the 70s, and there was like loads of there probably still is loads of sort of basement rooms that frequently got flooded, and it was great. And you would get people coming in who assumed, because it's in the park, that we were kind of park rangers, and amazing stuff. We get people,
can we rent one of the swan pedalos?
Well, come in, sort of saying, like a man came once really panicking because he'd seen a duck go underwater and he was really freaking out about it. Or people bringing in injured squirrels and stuff. It was actually a really...
Do you hold it? They brought in an injured squirrel for you to...
So this was a particularly bad time where a woman came in hysterical. I thought someone had died. Yeah. And her dog had attacked a squirrel.
Right.
And she was absolutely in pieces about the fact that her dog had done this. She like saw her dog in a whole new light and she was really upset by that. But she'd brought in this like savaged squirrel. And she wanted us, and so like we just wanted to calm her down, and so I put it in a cardboard box and thought we'll just rang the RSPCA. One thing I discovered about my time working at Mac is that the RSPCA do not care about wild animals. They really are not interested in ducks or squirrels. They literally do not give a toss. That I'd called them, they weren't going to come out for the injured squirrel. And basically, so I had it in a box under my desk at just at
how long time. For?
Well,
for a few weeks.
for the duration of that evening shift. Yeah. But that evening shift involved a really busy Judi Dench film, and as all these like elderly people came through, the squirrel basically reanimated and was just going apeshit in the box. And it was really traumatic trying to sort of say, and again, so people could say, what's that noise? Squirrel in a box.
Wow.
So yeah, there was fun times at Mac.
That's quite a story. Well, hopefully no dead squirrels and a lot calmer tonight.
Yeah.
Catherine O'Flynn, thank you so much for talking to me. As ever, a pleasure. And let's hope tonight's event goes well. I'm sure it's going to be perfect. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Right, we're going to go inside to the warmth now. Oh, that's nice. Okay, perfect. Thanks. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Park Date. There's lots more where that came from, and there'll be more in the future as well. If you enjoyed it, please leave a review, good or bad, make them funny. I'll be reading out the best ones, and there'll be a prize for the one that makes me laugh the most. Name check some trees in your reviews, and leave them wherever you get your podcasts from. Check out our website, parkdate.co.uk. And if you see me walking around in the park, come and say hello. I think that was the sound of someone sneezing. Yes. Thank you. Bye-bye. I've just been at the British Podcast Show, where I've been learning how to make podcasts which sound a lot better. So do tune in next week when the era of the bad podcast will end, and you will be able to hear a new era of reliable and good-able podcasts as I improve the quality of the podcast and it becomes good. Next week on Park Date.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.